I've fallen, and I can't get up.
No, you got the wrong number. This is 912.
Dr. Jim Keeney, Health and Medicine Podcast. Brought to you from
San Clemente, California.
At jim.md.
More fun than a colonoscopy.
Hello, I'm Dr. Jim Keeney. In the news, Michigan is looking to make mandatory vaccines for girls in sixth grade that protect against HPV, a sexually transmitted disease. I'm Dr. Jim Keeney, trying to keep you up here on the latest in healthcare breakthrough news. You know, a recent vaccine hit the market. The HPV vaccine stands for human papillomavirus. You may have heard about this in the news. There was a lot of controversy because it was recommended for girls as young as 11 or 12 years old. And it can be given to girls as young as 9 years old. And this for a vaccine against sexually transmitted disease. Well, this makes people a little bit uncomfortable giving 9-year-old girls protection against a sexually transmitted disease. Why would we need that? Here to discuss that with us is Dr. Leon Baginski, a board-certified obstetrician and gynecologist from Mission Hospital Regional Medical Center in Mission Viejo, California. Dr. Baginski, what can you tell us about HPV?
Well, HPV is a group of viruses, the human papillomaviruses, and it's a large group of viruses. There's over 120 subtypes. These viruses basically are sexually transmitted in terms of the genital ones. The ones that are non-genital, for example, though, the wart on the end of the nose of the Wicked Witch, you know, that's a non-genital, non-sexual transmitted virus. But it's in the group of HPV viruses, okay? They all infect the skin layers, basically. What you're looking at is a virus that's very difficult for us to manage because, again, it can cause these changes, and these changes can be chronic once they begin. So you get a patient with HPV infection, and she can have these dysplastic changes going for years. And even if you take out the person's cervix in the uterus, you still can have these changes occurring in the vagina, in the vulva. So they can get vulvar cancer, they can get vaginal cancers off this virus. So it's a virus that's really, it's a bad actor, and that's why we really want to try to eradicate it if we can or reduce the spread of this virus. In men, there has been association also with penile cancer with the HPV virus, but since penile cancer is such a low incidence in men, that's why no one's making a big stink out of it.
Have you been getting a lot of questions about this from parents?
No, I have not gotten too many questions from parents. I've had a couple of questions from patients that are in their 20s, sometimes in their 30s, and what's interesting is most of the people who are asking the questions are already married.
Yeah, so why are the people that are married asking? Are they worried about infidelity? Or?
No, I think they're the ones who are reading the articles, paying attention to what's going on in the news. I think the kids out there who are sexually active at greatest risk for getting the virus are not really paying attention to what's happening out there news-wise. If they're not paying attention to the news and HPV, they don't have much interest in what's going on. I understand that most of the young kids out there who are active, we're talking about these, you know, 15, 16, 17-year-olds, where really there's a lot of rampant activity going on. These are the kids who, you know, first of all, they think it can't happen to them.
Right.
And they're of the opinion that, you know, wearing condoms is sufficient protection against all these things, which, of course, we know it's not. And what's happening, of course, is you get the kids who are in the highest risk category paying least attention to this message, and the older people, those who are in their 30s and 40s, going, wow, look at that. HPV causes cancer. I didn't know that. And now they all want to be tested for HPV. But they've been married for 20 years, you know, have three kids, and they want to be tested for HPV. So it's like, well, you know, we'll figure.
Basically, a lot of 17-year-olds aren't worried about cancer right now.
No, they don't even think about it. Nowhere near their radar screen. They're oblivious to the idea of anything that's going to cause them a life-threatening illness or anything that will cause them problems with fertility or any of those issues.
And what are your thoughts on the vaccine for school-age kids?
I think it's a good idea. I think it's a really good idea. And I think that having the kids vaccinated, much like you would against measles, mumps, rubella, I think is a good preventative idea. And certainly, you know, I think that it encourages activity. I think it's going to be still with the home and the parents and, you know, the upbringing and so on. Because, again, the vaccine is just that. It's a vaccine. It doesn't change their behavior. It doesn't change the way they think.
The issue of contention here is mandatory. You know, so what do you think of making it mandatory?
I guess the question has to be, do we disagree with mandatory vaccines for school-age children with regards to mumps, rubella, measles? Because this is another vaccine. It doesn't really change the person. Again, it doesn't change their activity. It doesn't change their behavior. So if a child is going to be getting mumps, rubella, and measles because we want to prevent the downsides of those infections, and really we're looking at the downsides off of these infections, and they're not typically life-threatening kind of problems. with this vaccine, we're covering an infection that, again, can have life-threatening implications if it goes on to cancer. And certainly it can, you know, cause a lot of grief for a patient who has to go through testing and surgery potentially and cone biopsies and, you know, so on and so forth, which can impact their future fertility and some future issues for them. So I think that on the playing field of other vaccines that kids are getting, this kind of runs the same spectrum as far as I'm concerned. I don't look at it as a whole lot different. Okay. We're trying to prevent an illness that is transmissible from one human to the next. It is a rampant infection that's going out totally uncontrolled right now. All we're trying to do is get a handle on it, slow it down, try to impact the transmissibility in terms of eliminating those patients as carriers for the high-risk viral types. Again, we're not going to change their behavior.
Right.
And if we give kids a chickenpox vaccine because we don't want them to get chickenpox, and again, what's the downside of chickenpox for most kids? I mean, we all look at it as a self-limiting illness with maybe some scarring, you know, some skin scarring maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, there's not a whole lot of downside to getting chickenpox.
Well, yeah, a small percentage you'll get encephalitis or pneumonia. It's a small percentage.
Small percentage, exactly. So it's a small percentage, you know. But overall, you know, when I was a kid, remember, you know, we used to have our parents who used to take us to where kids were having chickenpox and get us exposed on purpose.
Chickenpox parties.
Chickenpox parties. You want the kids to all get the doggone virus when they're young, because when they get it as they're older, it's much more potentially, you know, lethal. So again, it's a situation where I think that, you know, this vaccine, it's in the same level as other vaccines. It's a preventative measure to try to reduce the incidence of a disease that really is rampant in our population.
What percentage of people that you see do you think have this infection?
If you look at the statistics on HPV, you're looking at 80% of the sexually active adult population.
Wow.
Has had the virus, okay, has been exposed to the virus and has had the virus at one time or another in their lives.
Right.
20 to 25% are currently infected with the virus, meaning the virus is currently active, or we can detect the DNA if we do a polymerase chain reaction test, a PCR.
Hmm.
Now, you know, that being said, we don't know if those other 60% of patients out there who test negative may still carry the virus, but in a load that's so small, we can't pick it up on our current PCR.
Right.
And so there may be copies of DNA that may be, again, so subclinical and unable to be detected that later on, if the patient develops another disease, another cancer, or she's on chemotherapy, it may reactivate the virus, and now it's going to replicate and cause problems with cervical cancer. And we see it, with, for example, with HIV. So patients who have HIV are much higher risk for cervical cancer. And that's because, of course, they're immune suppressed and the virus starts replicating and causes problems with the cervix. So we don't know, and nobody can really answer the question, is our patients who are culture negative for HPV virus, are they in fact truly negative? Or do they have so few copies of DNA present that we just can't detect it?
So this is a lifelong infection.
You know, that's what we don't know. Because again, we know that we can get to the point where, for example, if you take active young girls in college who pick up the virus when they go off to school, and you follow them, what you'll find is that you get a clearance of the virus, undetectable viral loads, after about 18 months on average.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes faster, sometimes slower, depending on the viral subtype. Now, the issue is, on those patients where they now become negative, this is what we don't know. Are they true negative?
Okay.
So, you know, we don't have the data to be able to tell us another 20 years from now, if that individual shows virus again, is this virus old virus that became reactivated because of some immune issues, or is this new virus? So in other words, was there something else going on? Did she get divorced? Did she remarry? You know, what happened? And we don't have any kind of study that's that long that you have to really kind of follow up for 20, 30 years to see, is this virus really gone?
So basically, if you had a 12-year-old girl and she was going for her vaccines, you would sign up for this one?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've got an 8-year-old daughter. When she comes time for her vaccines, I'll be talking to her pediatric doctor saying, yeah, let's do it. Let's sign it up.
Okay.
But let's get it done. Only because, you know, not that in my wildest dream I'm ever think that she's going to be active
right
before she's 3. Right?
Right.
We all say that, right? We all think that. And we all hope that our parenting is good enough that our kids will respect us and respect their bodies enough that they won't do this to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, that first person they may choose as a partner,
right,
that very first guy,
even if they're married,
the virus. Well,
yeah, I mean, even if they're married, they marry a guy who had other.
Well, that's the thing. Exactly right. The very first guy, it could be on their wedding night. The very first person they get married to, and they hold off until their wedding night. The traditional way of doing, you know, mm-hmm. This whole process. And this is now going to be a wonderful union, you know. And next thing you know, she was in my office 2 years later with HPV.
Right.
And the big question is, where did I get it from? Well, the answer is you probably got it from your spouse. Well, where did he get it from? Well, he got it from that one partner he had before you.
Right.
You see?
Yeah.
And that's the issue. So, you know, in order to protect her, because, again, you can't tell who's going to get it. Now, if you start vaccinating all males and females, again, you might make an impact. And so,
yeah, and that's
me,
why aren't they, they're not recommending males yet.
Yeah, that's See, and that makes no sense.
Yeah, because of the whole, I mean, the idea of herd immunity, it seems like that would really help.
Exactly. But what's going to happen is, and here's the problem. You're going to have some parents out there who are going to say no to the vaccine for reasons that they believe that this is something that is immoral to be given their young child who's not even discussing these issues. Mm-hmm. And so they may do it on a basis of religion or a basis of morality or a basis of just disgust with the thought of the whole process, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the issue that you run into, of course, is there's a little boy who's not been vaccinated. And
right.
He runs into a girl that's not been vaccinated. And all they're doing now is they're passing back and forth the virus. And now when he meets someone who, again, who has not been vaccinated, or worse yet, she's somebody who has led a good life and has not had any kind of exposure to any of these bad things, and then she meets this one guy, again, he now becomes the fulmite. He becomes the vector of spread.
Right.
Where if he was vaccinated, it may have prevented the whole process, and now she would never have had to deal with it in her life.
So you think eventually they'll recommend this for guys, too?
They should, and I think it's kind of a sexist recommendation when they say it's only for women. And the reason why they're saying for women only because they're saying women are the ones who are going to suffer from the disease.
Right.
And so let's ask the women, well, wait a minute. You know, how about getting rid of the mosquito that carries the disease also?
Right.
You know, I mean, we can treat malaria, but we also want to get rid of this mosquito because, you know, not everyone's going to be successfully treated with malaria.
I think some of us like to refer to ourselves more as a wasp or a bee than just a little mosquito.
Well, those of us who are married, we realize we're only mosquitoes.
Right.
but I can tell you that, that's a problem. And like I say, as long as we're not going to help modify the vector, we're really going to only partially treat the problem.
Right.
And I think that's what we need to. What's interesting is on this HPV virus topic, real quickly, there are some studies going on in Britain, and the Brits are looking at oral and buccal cancers produced by HPV.
Really?
Yeah. And what they're finding is they're seeing an association with buccal cancer and HPV exposure. And their belief is that the same cancers that are being created by HPV in the vaginal tissues are being created in the mouth as well, in the buccal mucosa.
Okay.
And, of course, yeah, so that's kind of scary, the thought that that's a possibility and that we might be seeing some increased incidences of buccal cancers with this HPV. So that's kind of where they're heading, at least on the European side. But that, in a nutshell, is HPV.
You've been listening to a podcast by Dr. Jim Keeney. You can hear more at www.jim.md.
Subscribe to my podcast now.
Don't miss another episode.